Welcome to Summer in the Rockies, 97 degrees one day, 67 degrees the next. This is Go West Young Podcast, your show about America's parks, public lands, and the outdoors. I'm Aaron Weiss at the Center for Western Priorities in Denver. Coming up, a conversation with an up-and-coming voice in the conservation world. Jessica Loya of the Hispanic Access Foundation tells us why environmental and public lands issues are so important to America's Latino communities. And in Western history, a talk radio host is gunned down in his driveway by white supremacists. It happened 33 years ago this week. One bit of housekeeping before we get going. We are hitting the road to stand up for our national monuments. The Center for Western Priorities Monuments to America Road Trip kicks off this coming Monday, June 26th, in Whitefish, Montana, ahead of the big Western Governors Association summer meeting. We will be there with the mayor of Whitefish and other sportsmen and outdoor leaders from Montana, encouraging Interior Secretary Ryan Zinke to stop his attack on national monuments and acknowledge the positive impact protected lands have on rural economies across the West. If you're going to WGA, head to Depot Park in Whitefish at 11 a.m. this coming Monday. Say hi. I will be there. We will probably record a podcast on the location while we're at it. And Monday's event is just a preview, by the way. We are loading up an RV for a six-state road trip later on in July. Stay tuned for details on that. Now, on to the news. Interior Secretary Zinke spent 3 days on Capitol Hill this week defending the indefensible, his proposed budget. Just to recap, this budget is a mess. Zinke wants to cut $400 million from the National Park Service. The Park Service's own budget document explains what that would mean in pretty harrowing detail. Cutting staff by 1,200 full-time jobs, it would reduce staff and services at nearly 90% of our national park units. Now, keep in mind, park visitation continues to grow at record levels, while Park Service staffing has already been cut by 11% over the last 6 years. Zinke's budget proposal also hits Indian country very hard, cutting $300 million from the Bureau of Indian Affairs. That includes cuts to tribal education, social services, and court programs. Zinke also wants to slash the Land and Water Conservation Fund. That's a program that he had stood up for when he was a member of Congress. But now that he's the Interior Secretary, he wants to cut $350 million from LWCF. And that's basically the only way for the federal government to acquire what are called inholdings, private land inside national parks and monuments that are being sold by willing landowners. And without LWCF money, that greatly increases the chances that those inholdings get sold off instead to developers who want to put trophy homes in our national parks. The other big news on our public lands this week, the Yellowstone grizzly bear comes off the endangered species list. This one is a mixed bag. On the one hand, the Yellowstone grizzly is an Endangered Species Act success story. The population had dropped below 150 at one point. It's now at 700, and the bear's range, which was limited to basically just Yellowstone Park back in the 80s, now extends out into larger parts of Montana, Idaho, and Wyoming. Now, the controversy with delisting comes from what happens next. This opens them up potentially to hunting. State wildlife managers say they are not rushing into opening up a grizzly season this year, but that does mean it's probably on the way at some point. Grizzly deaths at the hands of humans are already on the rise across the West as the bears wander onto farms and go after livestock for food. 59 grizzlies were killed by humans in 2015. And there are concerns the delisting ignores tribal nations. Last fall, members of the Cheyenne, Blackfeet, Eastern Shoshone, and Northern Arapaho tribes signed a treaty committing to restore the grizzly across North America. Since then, 125 more tribal nations in North America have joined that treaty. So don't be surprised if a lack of tribal consultation comes up in legal challenges to the delisting. Our guest this week works with community groups, churches, and foundations across the country improving the lives of Latinos in the U.S. Jessica Loya is a government affairs and public affairs associate at the Hispanic Access Foundation, and she is with us here at the CWP offices in Denver this week. Jessica, welcome to the podcast.
Great. Thank you so much for having me.
So, first off, the foundation may not be a household name for a lot of our listeners. What is your group's story?
Yes. So Hispanic Access Foundation is a national nonprofit based out of Washington, D.C. We work with Latino communities all across the nation in 19 different states, working to connect them with the information, trusted partners, so that they can make improved decisions or decisions to improve their lives. Everything from financial literacy and financial empowerment to education access, preventative health. And my role really is working on improving information surrounding the environment and public lands, clean water, clean air.
And you ended up getting involved with the foundation as a participant in one of their programs a few years ago.
Yes. So 5 years ago, when Hispanic Access started their environment program, they made a search for 7 Latino college students who were interested in environmental issues. And I was lucky to be selected out of quite a couple participants. I heard there was a few hundred. And we were able to travel through 7 national parks of the Southwest, everything from Rocky Mountain National Park, Great Sand Dunes, Arches National Park, and Mesa Verde. And so it was my first experience ever visiting public lands. I hail from the urban center of Los Angeles, California. And so for me, to go from that urban jungle to really the amazing sites and landscapes and the headwaters of the Colorado River in Rocky Mountain changed my life and solidified in me this wanting to grow in the environmental movement.
And you, I guess, parlayed that into a job at the White House.
Yes. So from this program, we were able to go meet with our elected officials, including the Council on Environmental Quality. And from a very successful meeting there, I applied for their internship and was there from September 2015 to May 2016 and proudly served under President Obama.
So one of the things you mentioned, you grew up in Los Angeles. There are national public lands very close. You've got the Angeles National Forest. You've, a bit further inland, the Mojave National Preserve, Death Valley. But you didn't grow up doing that. That wasn't a part of your life. And how, to what extent is that, you think, typical among parts of the Latino community, and what are you doing to change that or to have that kind of light bulb moment go off that you had?
Yes. So I would say that in Los Angeles, my upbringing did get me outdoors, but really, like most urban youth, it was outdoor small city parks and recreational areas, but nothing like the great landscapes of, like you mentioned, Angeles National Forest, now part of the San Gabriel Mountains National Monument. And it was really important for my mother to, keep us outdoors and keep us busy. But it wasn't until I got to college that I was able to live among the redwoods at UC Santa Cruz and really understand that there was something that I had missed in my youth and that many urban youth, primarily communities of color in Los Angeles, were not experiencing these great places. And so each summer I went back and I interned for various different environmental groups, including the Audubon Center at Debs Park. And one of the reasons I think partly our communities don't get to access these places is because we're unaware that they're there. There's not really outreach or programs for these youth to get outdoors. And so one great thing that we've seen come out of the previous administration was the Every Kid in a Park program that seeks to get every fourth grader out into our national public lands. And I think that program and programs like that will really help to light that light bulb, as you said, for some of these youth. And once the youth are involved, they get their families involved. And I know that was the story for me. I came back and I took my whole family, you know, a good 20 of us, out into San Gabriel Mountains National Monument.
One of the other challenges, I guess, with any urban community can be transportation and the ability to get out of the city far enough, especially if you're in a town where reliable transportation out of town is hard to come by, or everyone is primarily using public transportation. What is the foundation doing, or what are the possible solutions there to make it easier for urban residents to get out into the rural areas and public lands?
Yes. So Hispanic Access Foundation has been working to connect communities with their local public lands for about 5 years now. We have an initiative called Latino Conservation Week. It's a week-long initiative in July. This year, it's July 15th through the 23rd. And we work to connect communities with other organizations in their area, or we set up events ourselves. And we provide the transportation funds, all necessary planning and logistics to get hundreds of members of the community out to places like Santa Snow National Monument, Oregon Mountain Desert Peaks in New Mexico. And so, you know, I think really, it's that grassroots effort, and we've noticed that once we take them out once, they'll return on their own. They'll carpool amongst family and really begin to see that these lands are theirs and they want to take part in them.
That's as good a transition as any to the National Monuments fight that's underway right now. You are certainly knee-deep in that, in helping to generate and drive comments about National Monuments under threat. How has that process been working for you in terms of raising awareness of what's at stake right now with the Monuments Review?
Yes. So we recently launched a online campaign that's bilingual and accessible to the Latino communities. It's called latinosforheritage.org, where folks can go online and submit comments that will later be uploaded to the federal government website for the Department of Interior. And we found that this is a critical time for the Latino voice to really come out in force and to show that we have been a part of the campaigns to protect these places. You know, our organization has worked with communities in California around San Gabriel's Mojave Trails, in communities in New Mexico with Rio Grande del Norte, Oregon Mountain Desert Peaks, and even here in Colorado. Thankfully, Browns Canyon is not on that list, but we have worked with those communities, and we are reaching out to all communities and letting them know that even if you haven't been to these places, these places are important. You have to raise your voice and let this administration know, and the overall conservation community know, that you value these places, that you want to see them protected, and that you use these places and want to see them continue to be there for future generations. So that's extremely important. We're trying to change the narrative around Latinos and their participation in public lands.
What kind of reaction do you get when you're working with groups or communities that this may not be something that they deal with on a daily basis, something that they're not aware of or don't think of? What do you see when you talk to them? Is there a light bulb moment for them when you talk to them about your experiences?
Yes, actually. I want to say it's not so much a light bulb moment, but really a realization that light has always been there within them. At Hispanic Access Foundation, we believe that Latinos have been conservationists for generations, that it is deeply rooted in our culture, in our people, in our history, and that, you know, really just talking to folks, talking to them about their history. Many people, recent migrants, remember the great landscapes of their home countries. And we talk about how those places are here, how they can find similar mountains here in the United States, similar deserts, similar rivers. And that connection really crosses borders. And so for them, it's not the turning of a light bulb. It's recognizing that that light is there and that they need to speak about it.
Talking about rivers, I just watched a beautiful short film that the foundation produced called Leche y Miel, Milk and Honey, about agricultural workers around Yuma, Arizona, at the tail end of the Colorado River. How did that project come about?
Yes. That project is a culmination of a few years of work around educating Latinos about the Colorado River and conservation of water and water resources. And that specific film is a partnership between our organization and American Rivers. And so we have sought to capture this unique story of not just farm workers in Yuma, Arizona, but also evangelical leaders and a local historian, and really tell the perspective about how there's really a diverse community amongst Latinos and what we care about and how we talk about the spaces we participate in. And so this film captures the story of, as you mentioned, a farm worker and the importance of the Colorado River to their employment, to their livelihood. Yuma, Arizona, is one of the mega agricultural centers of our nation. Between the months of October to May, that is when agricultural workers get to work the most because the temperatures aren't as hot. And they produce the majority of leafy greens during that time for the United States and across the world. And so that captures a story of jobs as they relate to the Colorado River, but also faith and how we believe, many Latinos believe, that it is our moral obligation to be good stewards of God's creation, of God's lands and waters, that's not something we should exploit, and really educating them about the drought, about the consumption of water, and how every year less and less water reaches Yuma, Arizona, and even past Yuma, Arizona into Mexico, and the need to conserve water, both in our jobs but in our daily lives, and really bringing out that Latino voice and perspective.
It's obvious from that film and talking to you that working with churches, working with faith communities is very crucial to what the foundation does. Walk me through that process. What is that like, bringing faith leaders into your work, in your world?
Yes. For a lot of folks, they're considered untraditional partners. For us, it's really an easy connection to make because we understand that the Latino community, large majority of them, are still really connected to their faith, whether Catholic or Christian or of another denomination. And so we understand that faith leaders like our pastors or our priests, they give us, we believe in what they say. They give us good information, trusted advice. And so through Hispanic Access, we believe that why create another storyteller when you already have someone who grabs people's attention? And so we meet with faith leaders across the country and really talk to them about how within the Bible there are verses in Genesis and across that talk about being good stewards of our lands. And that really connects with them. It connects with them when they think about future generations and what they'll leave for their grandchildren and their grandchildren's grandchildren. And that's really touches their heart. We've been able to create an initiative, a group, a network of Latino faith leaders called Por la Creación, Faith-Based Alliance. And these faith leaders all across the country really gather their communities to talk about environmental stewardship and participating on in public lands and clean air and clean water and visiting their elected officials in Washington, D.C.
Obviously, the other big issue among Latino groups right now is immigration. And I know that's not something that the foundation specifically works on. But as we've seen President Trump pushing for his border wall, we've seen conservation groups weigh in on the environmental consequences if the wall gets built. Are there new partnerships or new awarenesses being created now that didn't necessarily exist before of the, I guess, the nexus between immigration and conservation?
So as you mentioned, our organization doesn't primarily work on these issues. But personally, I will say that I have seen a nexus of information and consideration for each other's issues really begin to germinate within the conservation movement. And I think one of the reasons that is, and I know that the Sierra Club has been working very closely with the League of United Latin American Citizens, LULAC, and Hispanic Federation around no border wall and talking to our elected officials about those issues. But it really comes to the fact that I think the conservation movement is learning that land is important not just for its intrinsic value, but for the value that it has to people. And that people have a connection to land, and people's lives are impacted in different ways, and not just by threats to national monuments, but say in Las Cruces, New Mexico, where you have Oregon Mountain Desert Peaks National Monument that's only less than 75 miles from the Mexican-American border, that you're seeing increased patrol of border patrols in a city that's primarily Latino and who love their public lands and are seeing border patrol on public lands and heightened rates. I think we're realizing that people feeling safe in public lands means not fearing border patrol. And so I think it's a great step that the conservation movement is taking to really look at these issues holistically as they pertain to the person.
No one's going to go visit a national park if you're worried about aggressive policing. You're there to enjoy yourself, not to worry about what's going to happen.
Very true.
How else, I guess, because you've already talked about a bit of this, how has President Trump's first 5 months in office changed what you and the foundation are doing?
Yes. So our foundation is really, we are a bipartisan foundation. And so we represent, conservative Latinos, liberal Latinos, and we understand about finding that balance. And so it's really been most important for our organization to find truthful, trusted information to push out, to provide both sides for all of the people that we serve. We continue to work with some of our administration partners in the Department of Interior through the National Park Service, the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service, because we hold internships. We place young Latino students in sites with them. And I think it's important that for our organization, we want to make sure there's a line of communication between this administration and ourselves so that we can provide the best information to the Latinos that we serve.
Absolutely. Anything else we haven't touched on here today?
I think it's important to note that at this time, when we're seeing threats to public lands, immigration, border walls, issues around water conservation, and how they impact not just Latino communities, but communities across the United States. It's important for people to see that we stand together And that one issue is not more important than another, but instead we stand in solidarity and share resources and share time and capacity. And so I really encourage folks who are listening to take this time to research about issues that may not be your hobby, but you may want to get involved in. And specifically to the work around public lands and water conservation, I encourage folks to use latinosforheritage.org to submit comments. I encourage folks to watch the Milk and Honey film. It's free online and really see how, from a different perspective, how these issues intertwine within your neighbors' lives.
The film, by the way, is at HispanicAccess.org. It's about 15 minutes long and very much worth your time. It's beautifully done. Last question. You're based out of D.C. You're from L.A. So when you get the chance to come out here out west, what are the parks or public lands that you either make sure you always make it back to or are dying to get back to?
So I am definitely dying to get back to Rocky Mountains and see the headwaters of the Colorado River and those landscapes that really drastically changed my life 5 years ago. And I'm really excited to go back to Grand Tetons National Park and visit Yellowstone. And my hope is that probably in the next 12 to 18 months, I get to take my own road trip and take my brother and my sister along so that they can see the love that I have for these public lands.
It's the best. All right, Jessica Loya is a Government Affairs and Public Affairs Associate with the Hispanic Access Foundation. Again, you can learn more about her work and see their films at HispanicAccess.org. Jessica, again, thank you so much for stopping by the office.
Well, thank you so much to the Center for Western Priorities.
We always wrap up with a look back at this week in Western history. This week, as we think about the shooting targeting members of Congress in D.C., we are going back to 1984 and one of the most notorious politically motivated crimes in the West.
You're listening to Alan Berg on KOA.
Alan Berg on KOA in Denver.
Alan Berg called himself the man you love to hate, a liberal talk radio host based out of Denver, heard in more than 30 states. He enjoyed getting a rise out of his listeners and callers, especially racists and Christian conservatives, and they loved calling into his show.
Well, I just want to ask you something. You're a reborn Christian. You believe in Jesus. Do you think Jesus stopped off, spent 7 hours with Oral Roberts saying, let's work out your books, here's how much you got to raise, Oral, and I got to get on my way?
No.
Now, do you wonder, okay, what do you think, Oral?
I think the name...
Oral Roberts, wait a minute. Oral Roberts says to you, God visited me for 7 hours. Is he psychotic? Is he crazy? Or is he telling the truth?
But Alan Berg always knew he was playing with fire. Here he is being interviewed by Morley Safer on 60 Minutes.
Isn't there something a little dangerous about this kind of broadcasting?
There is a danger. I agree with you. But I think that's the danger that we exhibit in all free, all rights of free expression, be it columnists who write newspapers.
Yeah, indeed. But you say yourself, you often go on there, you don't know quite what you're going to say.
Hopefully my legal training will prevent me from saying the one thing that will kill me. And I've come awfully close.
Too close. On June 18th, 1984, Berg was coming home from dinner. As he stepped out of his VW Beetle, he was shot 12 times by a MAC-10 machine pistol that had been illegally converted into a fully automatic weapon. Four members of a white supremacist group known as The Order were eventually indicted on federal charges of violating Berg's civil rights, though no one was ever formally charged with his murder. Berg was on a hit list that included TV producer Norman Lear and one of the founders of the Southern Poverty Law Center. He'd moved up the list after he confronted members of the Christian Identity Movement on the air who believed Jews were descended from Satan. Of the four members of the order who were charged, the alleged shooter and the getaway driver were convicted and sentenced to what were effectively life sentences, 252 and 190 years. One other was acquitted, and the fourth, who was believed to be a lookout in the shooting and one of the founders of the order, died in a fire during a standoff with federal agents in Washington State later that year. Alan Berg's story went on to become the basis of plays and movies, Stephen Dietz's God's Country and the film Betrayed. Oliver Stone's Talk Radio also drew inspiration from Alan Berg's life. Alan Berg, murdered in Denver 33 years ago this week. That's it for this episode of Go West Young Podcast. If you've got ideas for future episodes, drop us an email, podcast@westernpriorities.org. And just a reminder, we will be in Whitefish, Montana this coming Monday, June 26th. Stop by Depot Park at 11 a.m. as we preview the Monuments to America road trip. On behalf of all of us at the Center for Western Priorities, thanks again to Jessica Loya and the Hispanic Access Foundation. We've got links to their work, including their short film, Leche y Miel, in the show notes. My name is Aaron Weiss, and we'll be back next week.